clone. And scientists say it is well known that extra ingredients in pesticide products not only may themselves be toxic, but also may enhance or supplement the toxic effects of the active ingredient. Extra ingredients in pesticides commonly include surfactants that help chemicals stick to the leaves of plants, anti-foam compounds, and more. Yet the bulk of industry-sponsored toxicology tests are done using only the active ingredient. As well, there is very little long-term epidemiology data on glyphosate exposure, and there is no established base of information about just how much of the pesticide is in the products we eat and drink, because the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, have so steadfastly avoided including glyphosate in their testing regimes. And despite industry assurances of safety, there is an international body of published research that contradicts those claims. Several different scientists in several different countries have found associations between glyphosate and disease, most notably a link with non-Hodgkin lymphoma, while independent research on formulated products such as Roundup has found that the combinations of chemicals can be even more hazardous than glyphosate by itself. In study after study, exposure to glyphosate or Roundup has left laboratory rats and other experimental animals with a range of health problems, including tumors, blood and pancreatic problems, and liver and kidney troubles. Some research showed that exposed male mice developed a sarcoma that started in the lining of their blood vessels, while other work found that glyphosate produced fetal malformations in lab animals. One group of Brazilian scientists found that Roundup appeared to disrupt male reproductive functions by triggering cell death in rat testes. A team of British scientists that included Michael Antonio made headlines in early 2017 with the publication of research linking Roundup to fatty liver disease. The scientists mixed low doses of the weed killer with water and then gave the solution to female rats over a 2-year period. The dose was about the same as concentrations found in tap water, according to the scientists, and was actually far lower than the levels found in some foods. At the end of the study period, the researchers examined the organs of the animals and found cell damage and clear evidence of disease. Monsanto rejected the findings, as it had with other studies that link glyphosate with disease, saying they were based on flawed data and conducted by agenda-driven scientists. But others saw it as evidence that Roundup was much more harmful than anyone had realized. Concern when a group of Brazilian scientists published research in February 2017 showing that very young lab animals given soy milk laced with glyphosate suffered damaging hormonal changes. The finding raised alarm because mothers often feed soy formulas to their babies as an alternative to breastfeeding, and soy is commonly found to contain glyphosate residues. Well before that work, molecular biologist and a neuroscientist Andres Carrasco at the University of Buenos Aires and a group of colleagues set alarm bells ringing across Argentina with a 2010 study that found injections of a very low dose of glyphosate into frog and chicken embryos could cause spinal defects. Carrasco's work indicated that glyphosate changed levels of retinoic acid, considered fundamental for protecting the body from cancers and for helping embryonic cells develop properly. Those chicken and frog embryos subjected to heavily diluted Roundup showed serious malformations and/or died. Carrasco, who was a principal investigator at his university's Institute of Cellular Biology and Neuroscience when he did the research, was quoted in an Associated Press story in 2013, explaining that his investigation was triggered by reports of increasing birth and spinal defects in farming communities after crops genetically modified to be sprayed directly with glyphosate were approved for use in Argentina. If it's possible to reproduce this in a laboratory, surely what is happening in the field is much worse, Carrasco told the Associated Press. And if it's much worse, and we suspect that it is, what we have to do is put this under a magnifying glass. Carrasco died in 2014, but his findings have left lingering questions for health officials in Argentina. In Sri Lanka, scientific studies have suggested that a deadly chronic kidney disease that has afflicted thousands of people in farming areas is tied in part to exposure to pesticides, including glyphosate. Both Sri Lanka and El Salvador at one time debated a ban on glyphosate because of fears the chemical could be contributing to the epidemic of the new form of chronic kidney disease, which could not be attributed to diabetes, hypertension, or other known triggers. The World Health Organization became so concerned that it funded a study in conjunction with the National Science Foundation of Sri Lanka to delve into the matter. The resulting research report, published in 2013, surmised that a combination of harmful heavy metals and pesticides could be to blame. Glyphosate residues were among the pesticide residues found in the urine of the kidney patients. Also found was cadmium, a highly toxic metal known to cause cancer. Cadmium is particularly harmful to humans. It targets the body's cardiovascular, renal, gastrointestinal, neurological, reproductive, and respiratory systems. Sri Lankan toxicologist Chana Jayasumana theorized that glyphosate is a key culprit in the kidney disease seen among agricultural workers not just in Sri Lanka, but in other countries as well. According to Jayasumana, a member of the Faculty of Medicine and allied scientists at Rajarada University in Sri Lanka, glyphosate's ability to act as a chelator, a substance that creates bonds with heavy metals, was causing dangerous compounds that could make their way into food and water and eventually reach a person's kidneys. Glyphosate was actually patented as a chemical chelator in 1964 by Stouffer Chemical Company, though Monsanto has argued it is not very potent in that role. One of Jayasumana's research papers explained it this way. Here, we have hypothesized the association of using glyphosate, the most widely used herbicide in the disease endemic area, and its unique metal chelating properties. The possible role played by glyphosate metal complexes in this epidemic has not been given any serious consideration by investigators for the last two decades. Furthermore, it may explain similar kidney disease epidemics observed in Andhra Pradesh, India, and Central America. Although glyphosate alone does not cause an epidemic of chronic kidney disease, it seems to have acquired the ability to destroy the renal tissues of thousands of farmers when it forms complexes with a localized geo-environmental factor, hardness, and nephrotoxic metals. Research also suggests that glyphosate harms human health by exacerbating the damage done by other foodborne chemical residues and environmental toxins. The harm manifests slowly over time, creating conditions that damage cellular systems throughout the body, this theory goes. Some studies have shown that the weed killer is genotoxic, causing DNA damage in human cells that can lead to cancer. Other research indicates glyphosate may harm beneficial gut bacteria needed for healthy immune function. Many researchers fear that one of the worst impacts of glyphosate on human health may be as an endocrine disruptor, a dreaded term for chemicals that interfere with hormones in the human body in ways that can cause cancerous tumors, birth defects, and other developmental disorders. Endocrine disruptors have been associated with developmental and learning disabilities in children, attention deficit disorder, and cognitive problems. Humans are very sensitive to very low dosages of endocrine disruptors, according to Andrea Gore, professor and VASC chair of pharmacology at the University of Texas at Austin, especially developing fetuses, infants, and children. Small fluctuations from the norm can change developmental processes and lead to a dysfunction at the time of exposure or sometimes many years after exposure, Gore said in an interview with Vice magazine for an article about glyphosate. Several recent studies have shown the potential adverse health effects of glyphosate as an endocrine disruptor, including the 2017 soy milk study and a 2013 study by a team of four toxicology experts from Thailand, who found that glyphosate induced human breast cancer cell growth. These results indicated that low and environmentally relevant concentrations of glyphosate possessed estrogenic activity, the scientists concluded. A 2009 study by French researchers similarly found that glyphosate-based herbicides triggered endocrine disruption in human cells even at low levels. The scientists warned that the real cell impact of glyphosate-based herbicides residues in food, feed, or in the environment warranted greater consideration. Another study by French researchers, published in 2016, reiterated that warning, finding that glyphosate-based herbicides, such as Roundup, have endocrine-disrupting effects at concentrations well below those used by farmers. Scientists have found indications that Roundup and other glyphosate-based weed-killing products induce cell cycle dysregulation, a hallmark of cancer, and that Roundup can be toxic to human umbilical, embryonic, and placental cells. One study looking at several communities exposed to glyphosate-based formulations found chromosomal damage in blood cells, and scientists said the markers of chromosomal damage were significantly greater after exposure than before exposure in the same individuals. In a report issued in October 2016, Pesticide Action Network, PAN International, stated, "Exposure to glyphosate-based herbicides, even at very low doses, may result in reproductive problems including miscarriages, preterm deliveries, low birth weights, and birth defects." Laboratory studies have shown that very low levels of glyphosate, Roundup, and the metabolite AMPA all kill human umbilical, embryonic, and placental cells. Roundup can kill testicular cells, reduce sperm numbers, increase abnormal sperm, retard skeletal development, and cause deformities in amphibian embryos. One study of pregnant women in an Indiana obstetric practice found glyphosate in the urine of over 90% of women tested, and it determined that women with higher levels of the pesticide were found to have shorter pregnancies and babies with lower birth weights, outcomes that are believed to translate to long-term health problems. Part of the difficulty in establishing clear evidence is the rather obvious fact that researchers cannot ethically use people in experiments with glyphosate. So animal studies and observational studies of the health of people who work in agriculture, spraying crops with Roundup or otherwise being exposed, are the key ways scientists examine the issue. And because the government does not track or collect data on glyphosate residues in food, scientists cannot quantify how that route of exposure corresponds with or affects incidences of disease. Then there is the problem of trying to identify one pesticide among many that may be the cause of a specific disease. People, particularly farmers, are often exposed to multiple pesticides during their lives, and many pesticides are frequently used together, or at least during the same season. Research shows there have been increases in the global incidence of non-Hodgkin lymphoma, NHL, over the past 30 years. And even though the rate has leveled off in the United States recently, it is the seventh most common type of cancer in the United States. Farmers are at increased risk for the deadly cancer, and pesticides are thought to be the chief culprit. But trying to decipher which pesticide or pesticides might be behind the cancer cases has proven challenging. During the 1980s, the National Cancer Institute conducted three case-control studies of NHL in Nebraska, Kansas, and Minnesota, and Iowa, all top U.S. farming states. The heartland produces millions of bushels of wheat, corn, and soybeans every year, and an array of agrochemicals are used widely. Glyphosate is a favorite. Researchers later pooled the data to examine how the pesticide exposures affected a farmer's risk for the blood cancer. Researchers looking at 47 different pesticides found that glyphosate and at least eight other potentially carcinogenic chemicals used by the farmers showed links to NHL. Researchers also found an association between glyphosate and NHL in a separate, much smaller study from 1999. And a 2001 study across a large region of Canada found that the more often people used glyphosate, the higher was their risk for NHL. There is also fear that glyphosate can be extremely harmful, even in low amounts, such as traces of it in our food. By February 2016, around the same time the FDA was saying it would finally start limited testing for glyphosate residues in food, 14 scientists from Europe, Canada, and the United States issued what they called a Statement of Concern, directed to scientists, physicians, and regulatory officials around the world. In a statement published in an open-access scientific journal, the scientists pointed out that to accommodate the increased use of glyphosate that came from Monsanto's rollout of its glyphosate-tolerant crops, regulators dramatically increased tolerance levels allowed in corn, soybeans, and other crops. Human exposure has been rising, while regulatory estimates about what a tolerable daily intake means for people consuming glyphosate residues is based on outdated science, the group said. The scientists said that research shows low levels of these herbicides can do damage to people in the range of what regulators consider safe, and they recommended that regulators re-examine the acceptable daily intake for glyphosate, which is established at 1.75 milligrams mg of glyphosate per kilogram kg of a person's body weight per day for Americans, but is set much lower in the European Union, at 0.3 mg per kg per day. The scientists also said that U.S. regulators must prioritize glyphosate for government-led toxicology testing of its common commercial formulations, such as Roundup, because of research showing that when glyphosate is combined with other chemicals, as it is in Roundup and other glyphosate-based herbicides, GBH, the end product may be much more harmful than glyphosate alone. A fresh and independent examination of GBH toxicity should be undertaken, and the government should monitor GBH levels in people and in the food supply, none of which are occurring today, the scientists concluded. One of the commonly used co-formulants of concern in Roundup products has been a chemical called polyethoxylated tallowamine, or POEA, which works to help glyphosate penetrate the surface of plants. POEA is a type of surfactant, an ingredient that helps the herbicide adhere to a plant instead of rolling off onto the soil. Monsanto has said POEA poses no danger, but researchers have determined that it actually can be up to 2,000 times more toxic to cells than glyphosate. Fish exposed to POEA in research studies have died, as have rats, even at low levels. Still, regulators have not focused assessments on these types of ingredients or how they interact with glyphosate. Some plaintiffs in the legal cases against Monsanto claim the company knew that robust safety studies were necessary for the combination of glyphosate with POEA in Roundup, but skirted research that could have raised alarm bells. Monsanto has been steadfast in denying any such dangers or allegations of lax research. Still, the company announced in 2016 that it would transition away from tallowamine in its products, saying the decision was due to political debate, not any valid health concerns. Monsanto's move came after European regulators started moving to ban POEA from glyphosate-based products. Monsanto has long argued it has science on its side, that glyphosate has been proven safe and does not cause cancer, and that there are no hidden dangers in Roundup's full package of ingredients. Regulators in the United States and numerous other countries have largely agreed with those safety assurances, and the company can point to a stack of research to back up its claims. More than 800 studies demonstrate glyphosate safety, the company says. But critics are quick to point out that Monsanto's money helped fund a number of those studies, and some authors had consulting arrangements with the company. And it is notable, the critics say, that regulators have relied heavily on Monsanto-supplied studies when evaluating safety. Even research that might appear to be independent often is not. One of Monsanto's most touted studies, which was published in 2000 and presented to the EPA and other regulatory bodies, appeared to be authored only by three scientists from outside the company. The paper appeared to be an independent review of research on glyphosate, as well as POEA, used in Roundup formulations, and of the breakdown product, aminomethylphosphonic acid, AMPA, and ultimately concluded that a thorough assessment proved there was nothing to fear. Not only was glyphosate not a carcinogen, but the researchers declared, Roundup herbicide does not pose a health risk to humans. That research paper has been cited by hundreds of other publications. But the internal company documents that came to light in the Roundup lawsuits indicated that Monsanto scientists actually wrote that study. One Monsanto executive told colleagues in a February 2015 email that they could ghostwrite research materials and have certain independent scientists from outside the company just edit and sign their names, so to speak, just as they had done with the 2000 study. The revelations outraged the plaintiffs. Monsanto's ghostwriting has infected the scientific literature, plaintiffs' attorneys stated in court filings. Monsanto is often the puppet master behind scientific articles that are positive for the company, as well as U.S. EPA deliberations and reports. Separate internal Monsanto records were almost equally unsettling, revealing company executives expressing dissatisfaction with a scientist who the company had asked to look at genotoxicity issues and who had come back with a list of concerns. If a substance is genotoxic, it can have a destructive effect on a cell's genetic material, its DNA, causing mutations. But internal emails from 1999 showed company executives were unwilling to do the studies the scientists suggested needed to be done. Monsanto officials instead discussed a need to find someone else who might provide a more favorable view. The records also reveal discussions of seeking out highly credible scientists who could be paid for work to represent the safety of Monsanto products to regulators and fend off a growing number of questionable genotoxicity publications. The emails indicate that such scientists were recruited, and one key result was published research that shot down concerns about genotoxicity with glyphosate. After the internal communications became public, Monsanto argued that the records were taken out of context and did not accurately reflect company actions. The company insisted it did no ghostwriting, but rather only provided support and information to the authors of certain papers. But skeptics see the company documents as undermining the very foundation that regulators have used to vouch for Roundup safety. Calls have come from the United States and Europe for regulators to throw out what appear to be tainted studies. Monsanto tells us that Roundup is safe because scientists say it is safe, but apparently scientists sign their names while Monsanto signs the checks. This calls into question multiple studies, said Kara Cook Schultz of the United States Public Interest Research Group based in Washington, D.C. Monsanto insists that no other pesticide has been more extensively tested than glyphosate. Its safety has been proven in evaluations that span four decades, the company states. But while independent research that shows cause for alarm has been published for all to see, the company's own internal studies, which Monsanto says prove safety, are not available for public scrutiny because they are considered trade secrets. The ones that I've obtained make it clear that public scrutiny is not welcomed. Each page is stamped with the warning, contains trade secrets or otherwise confidential information of Monsanto Company. The EPA reinforces that message, warning anyone who obtains the studies that they are proprietary and cannot be posted or released for public viewing. Some of the research, which was presented years ago to the EPA, shows that test animals exposed to glyphosate did develop tumors or other irregularities, but those anomalies were judged by the researchers to be unrelated to the chemical exposure. Regulatory and scientific authorities worldwide have concluded that glyphosate, when used according to label directions, does not pose an unreasonable risk to human health, the environment, or non-target animals and plants, Monsanto states. But despite the company's assurances, over the past several years, the body of publicly available research contradicting Monsanto has grown, making it hard to know just how dangerous this chemical agent could really be. U.S. health officials have been trying for years to better understand not only glyphosate's impacts on farmers' health, but also how the range of chemicals used in farming affects farmers and their families. Their primary research effort is a government-funded project known as the Agricultural Health Study, AHS. This massive collection of research data was launched in 1993 with funding from the National Cancer Institute and the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences in collaboration with both the EPA and the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH. The project looks at any connections between the many pesticides farmers spray on their fields and the higher rates of disease many farm communities seem to experience. The government has ample research suggesting higher rates of leukemia, myeloma, non-Hodgkin lymphoma, and cancers of the lip, stomach, skin, brain, and prostate for farmers when compared with people in more urban areas. But it hopes to use the AHS to determine more specifically just how significant the risks are and what may be done to lower those risks. More than 55,000 farmers and another 30,000-plus spouses are enrolled in the study, all from either Iowa or North Carolina, two top farming states chosen for the data gathering. From time to time, the participants get updates from the AHS researchers notifying them of new findings. They've been told, for instance, that a commonly used farm insecticide called diazinon is associated with an increased risk of ovarian cancer, and another widely used bug killer called malathion has been associated with an increased risk of thyroid cancer. The study also has looked at the pesticide residues that invade farmers' homes. In a 2007 report, for instance, AHS researchers told the farm families that they had found residues of five different pesticides in carpet dust from their homes. The pesticide found at the highest levels of the five was glyphosate. The study is still ongoing, but has thus far found little or no connection between glyphosate and disease, including NHL. One 2005 AHS study of glyphosate-exposed farmers did suggest an association with multiple myeloma that researchers said should be followed up on. Otherwise, the AHS data favor glyphosate safety, according to many scientists. But even that is the subject of some debate. Other scientists argue that government researchers looking at NHL cases have not yet followed farmers long enough to get a solid base of information on a disease that can take decades to develop. Several other studies looking at glyphosate and different types of cancer, such as brain and breast cancers, also show no connection. For the average individual, reading through scientific research can be daunting, not to mention confusing. Different testing methodologies can lead to different results, and those results can often be interpreted in different ways. The scientific community relies not on one study or two, but often on many dozens or hundreds of studies before it reaches a consensus. Many studies conclude not with definitive answers, but with findings that add to a building body of knowledge. Research about glyphosate's impacts has been drawing the attention of regulators, lawmakers, environmentalists, and consumers for years. In fact, the worrisome tumors found in rats and the other health issues researchers linked to glyphosate helped fuel efforts by U.S. consumer groups to force labeling of foods made with genetically engineered crops because of the residues left after the crops are sprayed directly with glyphosate. But the general public did not take much notice of glyphosate until cancer experts with the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer, IARC, stepped into the debate in March 2015. The scientists who gathered in Lyon, France on March 3, 2015 for a week-long series of discussions about glyphosate did not expect the firestorm they were about to ignite. IARC does not aim to regulate substances, but rather to identify things that can cause people to get cancer. The goal is to determine where hazards exist to inform individuals and to help regulators in efforts to protect public health. To that end, IARC pulls together different scientists from different specialties and different countries on a regular basis to look at various chemicals, drugs, mixtures, occupational exposures, and even lifestyles and personal habits. These IARC working groups have evaluated about 1,000 agents since 1971. The group asked to evaluate glyphosate was made up of 17 scientists from 11 countries. Along with glyphosate, they were also charged with analyzing research compiled on four other pesticides. Make no mistake, these were no amateurs. The scientists assembled were among the elite, roundly seen as independent experts, pulled from top institutions around the world. Frank Lecurieux, senior scientific officer at the European Chemicals Agency in Helsinki, Finland, and an expert in toxicology, was part of the team. So was French scientist Isabelle Baldy, who holds a doctorate in epidemiology with a research specialty in environmental toxicology and works as assistant professor in occupational epidemiology and public health at the University of Bordeaux. Another scientist on the team was Francesco Forestieri, head of occupational epidemiology at the Lazio Regional Health Service in Italy. Experts also came from Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the Netherlands, and Nicaragua. Five came from the United States, including Matthew Martin, a biologist and rising star with the EPA's National Center for Computational Toxicology, who has received numerous awards for his work with toxicity data. And Aaron Blair, a scientist emeritus at the National Cancer Institute, served as chairman of the IARC team. Blair seemed the ideal candidate to lead the group. He had specialty knowledge in research that focused on evaluating cancer and other disease risks associated with agricultural exposures, as well as chemicals in the workplace and the general environment. And he had a long career of accolades and appointments that acknowledged his expertise. After receiving his doctorate in genetics from North Carolina State University and a Master of Public Health degree in epidemiology from the University of North Carolina, Blair joined the National Cancer Institute in 1976 and soon was named head of the Occupational Studies Unit. He has received numerous awards over his career and has served on many national and international scientific review groups, including for the EPA. He has also authored more than 450 publications on occupational and environmental causes of cancer. When he was named to lead IARC's working group, Blair had no reservations about taking on the glyphosate assignment. Industry players always take an interest when chemicals they profit from are up for IARC scrutiny, as they should. But Blair never expected that examining research would make him a target of Monsanto's ire. He would come to learn how wrong he was. When the IARC team began its assessment, it was not charged with doing new research, but rather with reviewing research already conducted, trying to determine how the various findings added up. IARC's process is typically tedious, to say the least. The assembling of relevant data generally begins several months before the working groups meet in person, and then the members generally spend long days in conference rooms analyzing data in subgroups, writing reports, and reviewing observations at the end of each day. The working group for glyphosate was no different. The members studiously analyzed older research as well as more recent studies, weighing the methods used, the consistency of results, and the levels of adherence to research standards. There were numerous animal studies to pore over, but fewer that looked directly at glyphosate's connections to health problems in humans. For that latter category, the team gave particular consideration to major studies out of Sweden, Canada, and the United States. The group determined that the best research showed a distinct association between non-Hodgkin lymphoma, NHL, and glyphosate. The team also noted that glyphosate was linked to multiple myeloma in three studies. However, the evidence for that disease was not as strong as the evidence tying glyphosate to NHL. The team also evaluated several studies that showed animals developed rare kidney tumors and other health problems after exposure. The studies combined to provide sufficient evidence of glyphosate's carcinogenicity in laboratory animals, the IARC team found. On top of that, the IARC team concluded that there was strong evidence of genotoxicity and oxidative stress from glyphosate, including findings of chromosomal damage in the blood cells of people after glyphosate formulations were sprayed nearby. Overall, IARC concluded that there was limited evidence that glyphosate can cause cancer in humans and sufficient evidence that glyphosate can cause cancer in laboratory animals. The conclusion would have been for sufficient evidence of cancer problems for humans, but for the agricultural health study work done by the U.S. government that did not show definitive connections between cancer and glyphosate, Forestiere, the working group member from Italy, told me. The evidence was mixed on humans, he said. Under the classification system set up by IARC, the group had five options. It could deem a substance probably not carcinogenic to humans, not classifiable as to its carcinogenicity to humans, possibly carcinogenic to humans, probably carcinogenic to humans, or the most definitive, carcinogenic to humans. For a substance to be declared carcinogenic, the highest hazard level, there had to be sufficient evidence of cancer in humans or other similarly strong evidence. For the second rung, probably carcinogenic, which was where glyphosate landed, scientists must find at least limited evidence of cancer ties in humans and sufficient evidence in animals. The team ultimately decided the weight of the evidence was not strong enough to put glyphosate in the most worrisome category, but it was more than enough to place it just below that. A Monsanto representative sat in on the deliberations and was given the opportunity to provide input but had no vote in the outcome. This chemical is a probable human carcinogen by any reasonable definition, said Christopher Portier, a toxicologist who was a non-voting invited specialist to the IARC working group's work on glyphosate. It is nonsense to say otherwise. Portier was retired by that time, living in a remote village in Switzerland. But before his retirement, he had led the National Center for Environmental Health Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Prior to that role, Portier spent 32 years with the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, NIEHS, where he served as Associate Director, the Director of the Environmental Toxicology Program, which has since merged into the Institute's National Toxicology Program. His experience and high level of expertise has earned him credibility around the global scientific community. But critics of the glyphosate decision were quick to seize on the fact that in his retirement, Portier did some part-time consulting work with the Environmental Defense Fund, a nonprofit advocacy group. Portier's affiliation with the group, whose mission is to preserve the natural systems on which all life depends, meant he was too biased to weigh in on glyphosate, industry advocates charged. Even though Portier did not vote on the IARC classification, his presence should be enough to discredit the findings, the industry players argued. But Portier, Blair, Forestiere, and the other IARC scientists said they were more than comfortable with the validity of their work and proud of the thoroughness of what was a complicated undertaking. In a full report on the findings, the group underscored why the work matters. They cited research showing glyphosate can be found in soil, air, surface water, and groundwater, and also cited studies showing glyphosate residues were easily found in food, including detections in 50% of cereal samples tested in Denmark and in 6 out of 8 samples of tofu made from Brazilian soy. They also looked at data that showed glyphosate concentrations found in human urine, both in urban populations in Europe and in a rural population living near areas sprayed with glyphosate in Colombia. We knew that any determination from IARC would have been important because we knew the product was widespread and there was a lot of interest, Forestiere said. What Forestiere and the other IARC scientists did not know was that Monsanto was tipped off to their decision on glyphosate before it was made public. Documents turned over in the court case showed that the EPA gave Monsanto advance warning of the decision. So, when IARC announced the results of its classification on March 20, 2015, Monsanto was ready with a counterassault. Monsanto's chairman, Hugh Grant, and other company officials asserted to reporters and investors that the classification by the elite group of scientists was mischief based on junk science and politically motivated. The company issued a statement reaffirming that glyphosate and glyphosate-based herbicides are among the most thoroughly tested and evaluated pesticide products in the world. Their 40-year history of safe use is supported by one of the most extensive worldwide human health, crop residue, and environmental databases ever compiled on any pesticide. The company also angrily demanded a retraction from IARC, and Monsanto wasted no time in calling on the EPA to defend glyphosate against the cancer claims. IARC's announcement was made on a Friday, and by the following Monday morning, Monsanto's Dan Jenkins, who led the company's U.S. regulatory affairs work at that time, was emailing and calling contacts at the EPA, providing the agency with talking points and urging the agency to correct mistakes or absences of fact with respect to its record on glyphosate as it relates to carcinogenicity. Monsanto's Philip Miller, Vice President for Global Regulatory Affairs, penned a letter to Margaret Chan, Director General of the World Health Organization, WHO, complaining that IARC purposefully chose to disregard dozens of studies supporting the safety of glyphosate. Miller said the company was anxious to address the issue. "Safety is our number one priority, and we know that IARC's conclusions will likely cause a great deal of concern with growers and consumers alike," Miller wrote. IARC's director, Christopher Wild, wrote back affirming the agency's support for the team's classification of glyphosate as a probable human carcinogen, calling the finding the result of a comprehensive review of the latest available scientific evidence. CropLife International, an agrochemical industry association, also stepped into the fray, sending a series of letters to IARC and WHO expressing concerns and asking for a clarification, saying IARC's findings have undermined our work with regulators. The decision by IARC could not have come at a worse time for Monsanto. In the spring of 2015, the EPA was wrapping up a years-long registration assessment of glyphosate that was supposed to look at potential evolving risks and see if there was any reason to limit the use of glyphosate. Before IARC's announcement, glyphosate was slated for a green light. The new registration report was nearly completed and was planned for release to the public later in 2015. Monsanto was also working to roll out a new herbicide that combined glyphosate with another weed-killing chemical called dicamba, along with new herbicide-tolerant crops to go with it. As well, the company was undergoing a similar re-registration assessment of glyphosate in Europe. With all that at stake, the IARC report was so potentially damning that Monsanto simply could not let it stand. Internal company documents show that within 2 months of IARC's classification, Monsanto was laying out a plan to spend potentially upward of $200,000 to provide a powerful counterpunch aimed at discrediting the IARC scientists and their work. The IARC classification was a severe stigma that had to be addressed, according to an internal report that laid out a series of proposals for scientific projects to show glyphosate safety. For one project looking at animal test data, the majority of the writing can be done by Monsanto to keep costs down, even though the project would have external authors. Another, broader project called for assembling a panel of credible scientists to publish a comprehensive evaluation of glyphosate's cancer-causing potential. Again, Monsanto hoped to do much of the writing to keep costs down, but pegged the costs at $200,000 to $250,000. Monsanto tried to keep the document laying out those details confidential, but it became public as part of the Roundup litigation. Monsanto's panel of scientists was formed in July 2015, and in December, the researchers reported, perhaps not surprisingly, that IARC was flat-out wrong in classifying glyphosate the way it had. The panel said the IARC scientists had incorrectly weighted or ignored data and that there was no evidence of human carcinogenesis. 10 of the 16 scientists on that panel had worked as consultants for Monsanto in the past and two more were former Monsanto employees. But Monsanto insisted publicly that the report was independent and maintained that it was more valid than the work of the IARC scientists. The team of 16 scientists that went on to publish their findings of glyphosate safety in a scientific journal called Critical Reviews in Toxicology. Some unsuspecting journalists reported on the panel's findings as though they were in fact independent and equal in weight to the IARC findings that they contradicted. Despite Monsanto's efforts, concerns over the IARC classification were not quelled. Lawmakers and regulators in many countries had already taken notice of the red flags being waved around glyphosate before IARC's news and were moving to limit use of the chemical. After the cancer classification, those moves intensified. Consumer protection officials in Germany called for a European Union-wide ban on glyphosate use by individuals. France restricted glyphosate sales to the public. Italy banned the use of glyphosate in public places and those frequented by children and the elderly. Colombia temporarily suspended the use of glyphosate to spray coca plants. Sri Lanka banned the importation of glyphosate. And, in an action that specifically rankled Monsanto, California said it would add glyphosate to a list of chemicals known to cause cancer. Monsanto fired back against California's actions, suing state environmental regulators to try to block them from putting glyphosate on the list. Monsanto argued the move would cost the company sales and force it to provide a warning on its products, something Monsanto said would violate its right to free speech. A judge in the case ruled against Monsanto, allowing the state to require warnings about Roundup. In its lawsuit, Monsanto took the opportunity to assail the IARC scientists again, characterizing the group as an unelected, undemocratic, unaccountable, and foreign body. The uproar over their classification and the attacks on their credibility caught the IARC scientists off guard. "We were not expecting this strong reaction and what happened," Forestieri recalled. "We were doing our job. I understood there were other issues, economic consequences. But none of us had a political agenda. We are scientists." Forestieri retreated and shunned hundreds of interview requests from media around the world. He and the other scientists, who were not based in the United States, were able to insulate themselves from the criticism a bit more easily than was Blair, who had to return home to U.S. soil, Monsanto's home base. Monsanto soon subpoenaed Blair's emails and other documents to try to discredit the IARC working group's findings. Throughout the uproar, the EPA provided much-needed aid to Monsanto, intentionally or not. 2 months after the IARC bombshell, the EPA said it had reviewed 32 studies that specifically analyzed whether or not glyphosate might be an endocrine disruptor, which, if true, would mean glyphosate indeed could cause cancer, along with infertility, diabetes, or other problems. But the EPA said there was nothing to fear, for the studies proved glyphosate's safety. What the EPA did not say was that 27 of the 32 studies were either conducted by or funded by Monsanto or its industry allies. Only 5 of the studies considered by the EPA were independent, and 3 of those 5 did in fact find that the chemical could pose a threat. Even many of the industry's own studies had findings that could suggest exposure to glyphosate was dangerous, but when the animals exposed to glyphosate suffered health problems or died, the scientists for these industry-backed studies dismissed the results as not valid. And, in what would become a highly controversial move, the EPA's own cancer experts, the Cancer Assessment Review Committee, CARC, responded to IARC's classification with a report that purported to reevaluate the issue. And again, the agency found no cause for alarm, determining that the best literature showed glyphosate was not likely to cause cancer. The group did hedge its bets with respect to non-Hodgkin lymphoma, however, citing conflicting evidence for the association between glyphosate exposure and NHL. Because of that lack of clarity surrounding NHL, the group said this: "While epidemiologic literature to date does not support a direct causal association, the CARC recommends that the literature should continue to be monitored for studies related to glyphosate and risk of NHL. The EPA's Office of Research and Development, ORD, the scientific research arm of the EPA, reviewed the agency's glyphosate cancer analysis internally and found it flawed in many ways, lacking support for the finding of not likely to cause cancer. The ORD said the agency had not followed its own guidelines in coming to its conclusion. The EPA did not budge, however, sticking with its defense of glyphosate's safety. What observers did not know at the time, but learned later as the company's internal documents were unsealed in the Roundup litigation, is that Monsanto had an especially helpful and well-placed ally within the EPA. A longtime agency scientist named Jess Rowland was in close communication with Monsanto regarding glyphosate's review and was seen by the company as someone who could be especially useful in defending glyphosate. Rowland served at the time as the Deputy Division Director within the Health Effects Division of the EPA's Office of Pesticide Programs, managing the work of scientists who assessed human health effects of exposures to pesticides like glyphosate. And, importantly, he chaired the EPA's Cancer Assessment Review Committee, CARC, which issued the report that contradicted IARC's findings. Rowland had a long history of taking a favorable position on Monsanto's glyphosate. In 1998, Rowland and the Hazard Identification Assessment Review Committee, where he served as executive secretary, recommended that EPA drop the extra safety margin designed to protect children in the agency's reevaluation of what constituted a safe dose of glyphosate. So it is not surprising that Monsanto turned to him after the IARC decision. Emails obtained from the EPA through the Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, show that there were telephone communications between a Monsanto executive and Rowland about Monsanto's desire for the EPA to help counter IARC. Details of what the two may have said to each other are unknown, but an internal Monsanto document says that Rowland told Monsanto at one point that he would try to kill an additional review of glyphosate planned by the Agency of Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, a unit of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And indeed, as of this writing, no such review has occurred. More help from inside the EPA was seen in an odd event in the spring of 2016. Rowland's CARC report, which was so favorable to Monsanto, was not supposed to be made public for many more months, as it was intended to inform a broader EPA report still underway. But on Friday, April 29, the CARC report mysteriously appeared on the EPA's website. Monsanto immediately copied the report and then touted it on the company website. The report remained on the EPA's website for 3 days before the EPA pulled it down and issued a public statement saying it was inadvertently posted. It may have only been 3 days, but the documents still got wide play in global news outlets as Monsanto pointed to helpful EPA language in the report such as this. The epidemiological evidence at this time does not support a causal relationship between glyphosate exposure and solid tumors. There is also no evidence to support a causal relationship between glyphosate exposure and the following non-solid tumors: leukemia, multiple myeloma, or Hodgkin lymphoma. The epidemiological evidence at this time is inconclusive for a causal or clear associative relationship between glyphosate and NHL. The report gave Monsanto fresh ammunition as it battled to quell the mounting number of lawsuits brought by people who said Roundup gave them or family members cancer. The company even took a copy of the report to a key May 3rd court hearing to help defend itself against the lawsuits. The temporary publication of the helpful report also came, coincidentally or not, shortly before a key European vote on whether or not to reauthorize glyphosate in the European Union, which was scheduled for May 2016. The vote ultimately was postponed. Skeptics smelled a rat, but the EPA refused to answer questions about the CARC report and refused to comply with FOIA requests seeking agency documents that might explain the fiasco. Rowland left his 26-year career at the EPA shortly after the leak and sequestered himself, ducking questions from me and other reporters. Interestingly enough, Monsanto knew in advance Roland was ready to leave the agency. Jenkins, the company's regulatory affairs leader, told his colleagues as much in a September 2015 email, saying, "Jess will be retiring from EPA in 5 to 6 months and could be useful as we move forward with ongoing glyphosate defense." The conversations revealed in the documents show nothing less than a concerted effort by Monsanto and the OPP, Jess Roland, and his CARC committee to kill the glyphosate lymphoma issue for the company, the plaintiff's attorney stated in a court filing. The documentary evidence strongly suggests that Mr. Roland's primary goal was to serve the interests of Monsanto. Roland was later forced by the federal judge overseeing the Roundup cancer litigation to sit for a deposition and acknowledged, only after a specific order from the judge, that after he left the EPA, he started doing some consulting work for chemical industry interests, including two that are among Monsanto's closest associates, court filings submitted by plaintiff's attorneys stated. Roland refused to provide details about how much he was being paid, or the details of how and when he got the jobs, and the judge in the case declined to allow Roland to be pressed further. The CARC report authored by Roland was certainly key for Monsanto, but the EPA's defense of glyphosate didn't stop there. In September 2016, the agency published a 227-page report stating definitively that its best experts had determined glyphosate was not likely to cause cancer in humans. Agency officials said their findings were based in part on unpublished studies submitted by Monsanto and other industry players. That differed from the work of the IARC group, which had focused on peer-reviewed, published studies. Notably, Martin, the EPA research biologist who was part of the IARC working group that declared glyphosate probably cancer-causing, was not included on the EPA's own team that evaluated glyphosate for cancer links. To strengthen its glyphosate safety determination, the agency announced it would seek input from independent experts on the matter. When dealing with tricky scientific issues involving chemical research, the EPA often sets up what it calls a Scientific Advisory Panel, SAP, which it stacks with the best and brightest minds it can find in toxicology, epidemiology, microbiology, and other relevant disciplines. The meetings are open to the public, offering a glimpse into the often dry, but important, discourse that goes into classifying chemical risk. For glyphosate, the EPA did the same, signing up leading research specialists from around the United States to come together and advise the agency on its view that glyphosate was unlikely to be carcinogenic to people. The EPA specifically said it would be good to have a careful review of existing epidemiologic data given the IARC determination. Monsanto did not want the outside scientists brought in, did not want the SAP on glyphosate to be held. Such a panel of independent experts could create legal vulnerabilities, an internal Monsanto document stated. Publicly, Monsanto called the SAP an unnecessary use of resources. But, to its credit, the EPA refused to back away from the plan, setting the 4-day meetings for mid-October 2016. Still, even this seemingly public-minded move by the EPA would become an example of the power of industry influence. When it became clear that the EPA would go ahead with the gathering of scientific experts, industry executives made their ire known. The U.S. trade group CropLife America, which is funded by Monsanto and other makers of agrochemicals, complained in writing to the EPA that the meetings were a waste of taxpayers' time and said it had significant concerns about the prospects of a public meeting on the issue. CropLife argued that if the meetings were to be held, at least one of the independent scientists chosen to help advise the EPA was not suitable. CropLife specifically called for the EPA to remove Peter Infante, an expert in epidemiology, from the panel. The demand was a bold one. Infante was world-renowned after spending 24 years with the U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration. helping to determine cancer risks to workers during the development of standards for toxic substances, including asbestos, arsenic, benzene, and formaldehyde. His resume also included a stint at the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, where he conducted epidemiological studies related to carcinogens.